I'm Eric Warriston.
And this is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, the season's over. What are your thoughts as you look back on 2023?
I think it's the nightmare I'd like to forget as soon as possible. Let's get to the roster. But any parting thoughts? You were at the game, Eric. Any last thoughts from the last game?
I think just the way, exactly what you said, this sense that the season was going to end that night. There was very little feeling that the Revs would pull it out, especially when they couldn't find an early goal or maybe get something to change the energy and the way the vibrations were moving. And it just seemed like the ball was not going to bounce their way that night.
Yeah. Yeah, I had hope. The last podcast that we did, we had a sense of optimism going into this game that if they could pull it out, the path to the MLS Cup was there for a home game, thinking ambitiously. But certainly that game did not come together and punctuated with a red card at the end of the first half, which is just about the worst timing you could think of for a red card foul.
And let's talk about that a little bit, because it was a VAR red card, and I think pretty clearly he stomped on the guy, but I think it's the kind of call that if they didn't have VAR, nothing would have happened, because even though when it happened in real time, it seemed like Marc-Anthony Kay was the one who got fouled, and that he might have stepped near him or over him after the play.
Right.
And then once you saw the VAR, which actually we had Apple TV going on one of our phones in the stands, so we were able to see it before they actually called it. And as soon as we saw we rewound the Apple TV and saw the play, I said, oh, intentional or not, he's going to get sent off for that, because the ref's going to look at that and think that he stomped on him on purpose. And
right.
Really, I think he was being pulled down and there was almost nowhere else for him to step. But so harsh red, but also understandable given the circumstances and the kind of thing that on VAR you're going to get called for more often than you would in real time.
Well, I like this concept of fan-driven VAR. Maybe there could be some kind of participatory...
Right.
I mean, it would be home field advantage, right? Wherever there's an issue. But there's something to this. I'd like to explore it further. Let's think about it. Maybe a future podcast, bring it up with the league.
I like it. It sounds good. Like, just put it to the fans. What do you guys think? And then how does that compare to the actual call that was made?
Right. Yeah, it actually would be an interesting study. Will the home fans be objective in determining the call?
Answer, no.
But I mean, in this case, couldn't he have been... Well, I guess even if it was a foul on Marc-Anthony Kay and he was obstructed, there was still the act of stepping on somebody's chest with cleats that would be problematic.
Right, it's 200-pound man stepping on the chest of someone with cleats on, who's lying prone on the ground.
I'm glad it wasn't me.
But you're right, they could... I mean, we have the tech now that everyone can see the replay. Everyone has a device in their hand. So you could even, you know, you could put a poll out. And you see this on Twitter or whatever, when people used to look at Twitter. You know, people would put a poll up instantly, red card, not a red card. But what would be interesting maybe is you could do that poll and then break it down by people at the stadium, people watching at home. I don't know.
So yeah, a red card at the worst time, in a crucial game, and from a player who actually I think has had a very strong season overall. Perhaps there were some downward trends towards the end of the season, but I thought Marc-Anthony Kay was a stalwart for the team. We were talking a little bit, Eric, where do we think the roster goes from here? I mean, just a mightily disappointing end to the season that really started after Arena was let go and or suspended. I think the Revs won like two games after the infamous League's Cup. And is the team there? I mean, in a sense, they were in second place going into that tournament in the league, right, running for the supporter shield once again. Do we throw the bathwater out with the team here or keep some players? What do you think?
I think the roster is really interesting when you look at it, because you have a real mix of promising youth and on the one on maybe the left side of the chart, and then if you look at the right side of the chart, you have some folks who are either near retirement or just didn't pan out. And then in the middle, you have this sort of prime, like almost prime or maybe just past prime players. And just to put some names maybe to what I'm thinking about is, you know, you have these core players like Brandon Bye and DeJuan Jones and Carlos Hill, who should be back next year, should be better than ever. And then on that left side of the chart, you have guys like Chonkele and Ezmir Baratevich and, you know, Noel Buck, you know, maybe Jack Panayiotou, some others. And then on the right side, there are these roster moves that just didn't really pan out. And I think, you know, your Bobby Woods, your Giacomo Veronis, Thomas Vaclik, who they, you know, signed and I think never appeared and only made the game day roster one time. And so you could see some of those players who either didn't pan out or maybe are a little bit older. Omar Gonzalez, I thought, came on as the season went along, and
he had a good season.
Yeah, he had definitely had a good season. I think better season than last year, and as the season went on, became much more dependable. You know, I think the role they were having in play was to come on and help finish out games where they had a lead. Unfortunately, in the last 6 weeks of the season, that wasn't many games, but when he did come on, he seemed effective and up for it, and so that was exciting. So I don't know, how do you see the roster?
Yeah, it's a perplexing one, because in theory, right, there's some people who I think will benefit from moving to another team, at least from a Revs perspective. But I'm unclear. It's hard for me to tell if this team has potential or not. Like I think of that famous football coach, Bill Parcells, right? He said that your record says who you are, or you are who your record says you are.
Right, right.
And despite, you know, some of the good players on the team, they were not a strong team for most of the season, or at least half the season, let's say. And it's hard for me to tell if they really have something special there to build on, or if there needs to be a number of changes. Like, just going through, I agree. I think like all the people who are in the youth movement, we need to keep and stay. And I'm not clear on some of the players who went out with severe injuries, like Bye or Barrero, how they'll be when they come back. So it's really hard for me to tell what this team is really capable of. There was one piece of good news, though. I'm not sure right. if you saw that, but Tomas Chonkalai has officially right. been signed off of a loan to be on the roster. So that's huge move. I think he was the best player on the Revs roster since he came on, with some stunning goals, dangerous from all over the field, could dribble, could play the sombrero.
Yeah, six kind goals of like in 11 games. I mean, yeah. just a real bright spot in an otherwise dark end of the season. He really picked it up, and it's good to see that he'll be back next year. At the same time, this may be it for Gustavo Bowe in New England. We don't know, but this former Argentina club has asked for him, made noises that they'd like him back there, but who wouldn't? Okay. So we'll see if that's just wishful thinking on their part, or if the Revs maybe parting ways.
Right.
I hope not. He's an exciting player. 7 goals in 19 games, but only started 14 of those games and felt like he was coming back from injury for much of the last 2 years, but was effective when he was out there.
Right. Yeah, so I think there are a number of people who you do wonder if they'll be back. And the people who I admired and loved watching on the field, like Polster, McNamara, Rivera had a bright start but hasn't come through this season. Sweat, Spalding. Really, there's just a lot of people in the midfield there, and maybe on the defensive half too, where you just wonder if they're really a part of the roster going forward.
Right. There were, besides sort of the stars of the team, there were a lot of players that look really good in spurts. And then, you know, you get excited that this could be someone who could maybe dominate the position and help make a difference. And then either through injury or coach's decision or whatever, they're not out there. I mean, when Ian Harkes started playing for the Revs, it looked like just a dynamite. This is exactly the kind of player they need. Well, he appeared in 9 games this year. So,
yeah, I think he got injured. That was part of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And maybe this is all a study in the importance of a manager. Maybe they really do matter as good as these players are.
Yeah.
Without somebody to bring a system, and if you're playing in a lot of chaos. In fact, there were some choice words from a few members of the team after the last Philadelphia game, talking about the chaos within the organization, and really throwing the Revs organization, the front office in particular, under the bus. And that is not about the people who are coaching them. It's about the president and of the club and the owner, really, too. Of not having consistency and stability in the club, which they feel is really important as players.
Let's start this way. And you can't say Carlos Heel to answer this question, but who was the MVP of the Rev season this year?
This season.
Yeah.
That's a tough question. And I can't say Carlos Heel?
You can't say Carlos Heel. I think we would all agree he probably is. 11 goals, 15 assists, played 32 games. I'll give you my answer. You tell me what you think. I think the MVP of the Revs team, apart from Heel this season, was Dave Romney.
Dave Romney. Interesting. I was going to go with their former goalkeeper.
Yeah, I would have maybe said that, but he only played in half the games, right?
Right, but so the Revs were in second place to that point.
True. I just thought of all the changes they made at the start of the season, he was the one who was actually better than advertised as far as what they got. Chocolat came on kind of late. In my mind, it was too late to be eligible for this artificial award that I'm making up. But I'm looking forward to seeing him play next year. But I thought Romney, very reliable, didn't get beat very often, was often in the right place at the right time. And, you know, on the offensive end, he only had one goal, but they started running more corner kicks for him and free kicks for him where he was the intended target. And I just thought he was kind of it was a nice addition, especially with Kessler out for so much of the season. So I'm looking forward next year to see if Kessler and Romney can play together, and then if Bye and Jones come back. They look good as a unit, so we'll see if, you know, I'm excited to see what they'll look like together, because I think that's potentially one of the better groups of four defenders in the league.
Right. On paper, if Barrero comes back healthy,
and right,
I guess players can come back from ACL. It's not career ending. So let's assume he's able to put a strong performance in. Then we have Barrero, Heel, Buck, Chunkalai, Jones. I mean, you start to get excited about their prospects again, right?
Right. I mean, and the real question is, you know, will they have and who's going to play the role of the enforcer type to protect Carlos Heel? Because we saw Heel get beat up a little bit, especially in the playoffs, but really all season long. And maybe that guy is Tommy McNamara, who was injured for a good part of this season. Maybe it's someone from the outside. It really seemed like they were missing that a little bit, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah.
One of the nice things about, we waited a couple of weeks to do this podcast from the end of the season, and I'm already somewhat optimistic about next year, especially since they brought Chonkele back in. Some of the young players will be there. It's kind of the same question for all the younger players, which is, will these guys make the leap from showing flashes of brilliance to being reliable scorers, passers, reliable lineup participants? And Buck, I think, was the only one that really did that this year.
Yeah.
Where he was in the starting lineup, you know, 20 times this year out of 25 appearances. That wasn't the case for some of the other young players the Revs brought.
That's good.
I say, so 2023, we won't really spend a lot of time remembering this season, I think, in the years to come, but some interesting parts, and be interesting to see how it plays out next year and beyond.
Right. Yeah, so they made that one signing so far with Chankalai, and they also signed Kurt Inolfo as sporting director, which I might need a little assistance here in terms of what a sporting director really is. But it seems like it's an important part of the puzzle to hire a new coach or new manager. And Bruce Arena formerly had both roles of sporting director and manager, meaning he was responsible for player development and building the roster and signings. I think the sporting director, correct me if I'm wrong, takes on more of that roster side of the
right.
of the game. And so they've made a commitment there. I have really no commentary on Kurt Inolfo in that role. Hopefully he's been with the organization already to this point. So I think it's a step forward anyway in the manager search.
Yeah, I mean, I think the faster they settle the front office, the better things will be, the more players will have a sense of if this is a place they want to be or not.
Well, I think the Chankalai signing, thinking optimistically, because I wasn't thinking optimistically a couple of weeks ago, I have to be honest, after they went out, I was thinking, wow, this team needs to be blown up. They are who the record says they are. And despite the managing situation there, I think it reflected something on the team. Now that I've had a chance to go through my sort of adjustment process there, I do feel some optimism. And Chankalai signing means that if he was to join the team permanently, there must have been some kind of right back channel communication or direct communication to Chankalai to say, we're going to build this team, and this year was tough, but we're going to have it stabilized and ready to go for 2024.
Well, before we get to 2024, there's been some other news about the Revs that's been out there. And, you know, first things first, the timing of these things, we always get a kick out of, because they just started the process of season ticket renewal, and right on cue, another new stadium story. This one,
it's gone further. Right. It's in the press. It's not only it's in the press, it's in legislation at the Mass State House. So it's definitely in the works.
So not in Quincy, not in Somerville, not in Medford,
not in Boston.
I'm trying to think where the other proposed teams were. But in anyway, this would be in Everett, right across the river, near the Encore Casino. Definitely seems interesting. It has some momentum. The Revs are officially attached to the project in a way that I don't know if they were for the other ones. But
yeah, it does seem more promising than the other ones, and it seems like a good story. You've got an old power station.
That's a good name for the stadium. Wouldn't it be if they called it like Power Station Field or something like that? Maybe.
I love it. That's great.
And 25,000 is the capacity that's been rumored and
been floated around. Yeah, that was interesting, because I heard that and I'm like, why think so small? It seems not that big. It isn't compared to other sporting stadiums like American football or baseball. But we were looking at a list of all the MLS stadiums, and actually that would be in the top 50% of capacity, which is interesting. All the soccer-specific stadiums are relatively small.
Right, yeah. Most of them have capacity of around 20,000 20,000, 25,000. There are some bigger ones, but those are mostly downsized football stadiums. So Gillette Stadium, obviously.
Right, and the Revolution have been drawing some big crowds this season too, at least a few games, at least 3 to 4, I think, close to 30,000 or above. The last game of the season, technically, you had 41,000 tickets sold. So 25,000 does seem a little bit small for me when you think about trying to aim high in terms of attendance and revenue and building an exciting club that would be a big draw for players. It seems like having a small stadium closer to capacity, obviously less expensive to build and takes less space. But in the long run, if you're thinking about building a team for that leads MLS and that is setting the bar for something along the lines of how the Patriots had an amazing couple decades, it just seems like you would want something bigger. But you know, you're looking at these other stadiums. Philadelphia Union tops out at 18,500. The LAFC stadium, and you think about LAFC as a big team, is only 22,000. So maybe there is, you know, something in that range there, in the 25,000 range, that works well for a lot of teams and could be competitive. But I also read, there's an interesting article about teams who get their stadiums, and of course we're all thinking about the team, how fun it would be and nice to go to a game in a true soccer stadium with the environment and everything that would go along with that, and grass field. We could still keep our last team on turf name. But a number of teams have struggled to really turn the corner even while having a stadium. The Philadelphia Union have a stadium, have never won a championship. FC Cincinnati, they might win it this year. They have a 26,000 person stadium. I think about DC United, who played for a long time at the old RFK Stadium in Washington, DC. That was a football stadium, which I thought was great for soccer. They built a new stadium, and I don't even know when was the last time they made the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know what happens to those teams if there's distractions or roster turnover. So if you think about the Revs, if you want to project out, Carlos Heel is 31. By the time a stadium would be built, he might be 35. I don't know. Could it take 4 years to go from a brownfield abandoned power station in Everett to a nice stadium? I guess it could. And so could have a team that's looking for its next superstar and in a major rebuilding phase right when the doors open to a new stadium. And if a stadium even gets built, because this is a team that famously has more stadium rumors than they've had championships, and has had more stadium rumors almost than there have been seasons, it seems like, at least since the movement started in MLS to get teams their own building. But you also bring up a good point, which is, what would the playing surface be? Have they talked about a grass field there? It seems way too premature.
I would assume it would be grass.
Well, you'd hope so. I mean,
So
right now, 29 teams in MLS, 6 play on a synthetic surface, including the Revs. And then 2 play on hybrid grass, which I'm not really sure what that is, but sounds like it's a mix of natural grass and synthetic. And of the 6 teams that play on a synthetic surface, 2 of those are in Canada. So, you know, they're all, for the most part, northern teams that play on a synthetic surface. The one exception, the 2 exceptions really, Charlotte and Atlanta, which play in NFL stadiums. So if something were to change with that, then maybe you'd see that. And then Portland and Seattle.
Yeah, so maybe it would be one of these hybrid grass synthetic situations. I'd be happy just to get a stadium. I don't want to jinx it too much.
All right, well, maybe that's a good note to end. We'll end with some hopeful thinking around what a Rev Stadium could be.
Right. It's a long, and once again, it's a long off season for the New England Revolution, but being able to look every day to find the latest stadium news, it makes it go by just a little bit faster with a little bit more excitement, a little bit more something to look forward to.
I couldn't agree more. So with that, we thank you for listening and we'll drop the curtain on 2023 and see you next season.
Thanks for joining us and listening this season.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warrister and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warrister and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warrister. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of New England Revolution. The Last Team on Turf is a production of Row 12 Media.